church next time.
Well, that's true. Just missing the church next time.
There's only one man missing from this happy scene, and I think it's a shame that Gene McCarthy has refused to come to church. He has chosen to go off and fast in the desert instead.
Oh, that's good.
I'm happy to say, however, that we have another famous American here to console us. He is an immigrant son who has made good. So good that his name now is a household word. We can all be proud of Spiro. Skouros.
Oh, no. Oh,
it's a head table, see? There's another man here tonight whose name and career are recalled in many American households these days. I want to welcome Tom Dewey. His name is so immortal that I see it all over on bumper stickers down in my hill country.
Yeah.
They say Nixon's the one, and Dewey was one too. Is that too rough?
Oh, no, but that's awful cute.
Nixon's the one, and Dewey was one too.
Oh,
I guess that leaves me, with all respect to Archbishop Cook. I am not praying for miracles. I'm praying for Hubert. In fact, I'm praying for all of you. I remember a story that Lincoln told after he became president. It concerned the man who once stood right up in the gallows before he got a last-minute reprieve. A year later, he was on his way back to the gallows again for another crime. He rode in a slow-moving wagon while hundreds of town people rushed by to get a front seat at the ceremony. The prisoner stuck his head out of the wagon and he shouted, "You needn't be in such a hurry, boys. I've been there, and there won't be any fun until I get there." Well, I've been there, boys, and I won't say that I'll be sorry to leave there, to leave it to one of your men here tonight.
Yeah.
But I will say this. This is my last press conference. Pretty soon, you won't have Lyndon Johnson to kick around anymore. I want to keep my comments nonpartisan, so I'll include you, Archbishop, in that final benediction. Just the other day, one of our foremost newspapers quoted some of those famous inside sources to charge that a certain important archdiocese suffered from government by crony. Well, as I've said before, these are the New York Times that try men's souls.
Oh, isn't that cute? Oh, my God, that's a cute.
In all seriousness, my friends, it's an honor to appear at this traditional charitable dinner. The men and women who support this philanthropic effort of the Archdiocese of New York know the voice of suffering, and I know that good men must work and must care if we are to have a just society. Tonight, we can look back 8 years when Mr. Nixon and John Kennedy appeared at this dinner and recall how many Americans who cared about the poor and the black and the culturally deprived were very much out of the mainstream. We know how dramatically and profoundly that's changed. Tonight, tens of millions of Americans are deeply concerned about the welfare of their less fortunate citizens. Today, Americans do care. That itself is a great accomplishment. I'd only leave you, candidates and citizens, and some candidates need more reminding than others, with this thought. The cause of those deprived and discriminated against is not a cause that can be abandoned, exploited, or maligned. Their cause and our problems cannot be kicked under a rug or run over by a car. Not if America is to survive. Not if American democracy is to remain alive and meaningful. Yes, there can be legitimate differences about the tactics used to help the poor among us. But one tactic can never be acceptable. Let the problem be pasted over by those in public and private positions of great influence and responsibility. That resources and answers be left to a few dedicated Americans, to charity, to the kind of people who are gathered here tonight, because they care about America. That is no longer acceptable. The goals of private philanthropy can only be reached by broad-based public concern all across America. Americans care tonight. All of us must continue to care. And whichever of you gentlemen are elected must see to that commitment. Thank you.
Well, let me get my reaction very quickly. When you asked me first, should you go up there, I was going to say, I doubt that there is any way that you can persuade me to tell you that I think you ought to go. Now, you have read the speech. I have changed my mind completely. I just can't believe that that speech should go to waste. It's the cutest, cleverest, best-natured speech. I'd have to tell you now that in my opinion, you should go to the dinner and deliver that speech. It's an awful burden, I'm afraid.
No, I would rather like it if I didn't bring a lot of pickets and then get a lot of embarrassment and if I didn't just wasn't kind of a knot on the log, you know, with the two candidates there, and if it looked like I was trying to take the show away from them or something.
God, that's the cutest speech. The first two or three pages of that speech is the cutest stuff I ever heard any play. Oh, hell, I'd go with that. If you were just going to go and make a serious speech about government and democracy and Thomas Jefferson, I'd say, oh God, don't bother. But a cute speech like that is in such good nature, it would just show you off at your best. I cast my vote because of the speech. The occasion doesn't impress me much, but the speech impresses me enormously.
What it is, it's a very rich man's dinner where they all come and kind of pay tribute in the form of gold and silver to the archbishop, and he shakes them down and he gets his charity fund out of it. I've been going for 10, 12 years.
Well, I remember the time, it was a very famous one, when President Candidate Kennedy and Candidate Nixon, I guess, both attended in 1960.
Yeah.
And there, I think Kennedy had some cute stuff that he pulled there that got a good deal of publicity, but it couldn't touch the stuff that you had. My God, that cute stuff. So let them make the big speeches. Your speech won't take 10 minutes, will it?
Well, it's 1,000 words, and I do 100 a minute. If they don't applaud, don't laugh, I imagine they may take 15.
Well, it may take 20 for the gags that you've got in there. Well, I think it's the cutest speech you've just about delivered. I think it'd be a real tragedy or a real calamity if you didn't go with that speech. I sure would go. May I take up a quick
question? Yes, sure.
God, again, man. It's the cutest stuff.
Is anything too rough in there?
No, you've got...
What about that last press conference?
Well, it doesn't bother me.
Berg says it's too rough.
Huh?
Berg, I may have to say this may be my last press conference, and when I leave, you won't have anybody knock around. I think that's the funniest part, isn't it?
If you say maybe, I think it's all right.
Yeah, I think she may waffle it up a little, do you see? But put a maybe or possibly or something like that in, that'll take the edge off of it. But the whole thing is...
This could be my last press conference.
Yeah, it doesn't like that. Yeah, that would take any sharp edge off of it. But the whole tone of it is such that there's nothing mean about it. There's nothing...
What about that Dewey's one, too?
Well, it's all right with me, Christ almighty. The things the Republicans have said about him are about 1,000 times worse than that.
And they don't pull any punches on me.
Hell no. And this is good political satire, and if it's got a little stick in it, that doesn't bother me. I think it's all in very good taste.
Okay, now go to your problem.
Okay. I turn now to Fort Polk.
Be sure now to tell Muskie that I'll be glad to talk to him anytime he wants to.
Okay, go ahead. Fort Polk in Louisiana. Some time ago, at your suggestion, I had them start an investigation. I found that the Army, for some time, wanted to make it a permanent training base. It's been the most important one they've had for training troops for Vietnam. It's one of the best. It worked up through three stages in the Army, all approving making it a permanent base. Then it went to the Secretary of the Army, and he approved. Then through the regular chain, it comes up to the Secretary of Defense's office, to the Assistant Secretary for Installation, that very good man, Tom Morris, that put that show on the other day. Tom's staff studied it and recommended it. Tom studied it, and he recommended it. So it comes to me with an absolutely solid record of recommendations that it be made into a permanent base. Now, Russ Long called me and came to see me yesterday. Says it means a great deal to him. Says he's tried to cooperate, tried to be friendly, and this is something that's needed and it ought to be, and they activate it, deactivate it. People don't have a decent place to live and one thing another, all of which I sat silently through, but which, as a matter of fact, happens to be the truth. Now, I would like to move on. We don't have to make a federal case out of it, but we want to be able to give Russ and anybody else, and yes, we include Ellender, and of course, old Russ is a very practical guy, and he says that Ellender's coming along and doing better all the time, going to end up with some chairmanships, and we ought to get him aboard, and one thing and another like that. So I just list all that. But I think Russ is important to us, will continue to be important to us. And I would like your permission, if you see fit, to go ahead and on a routine basis, just issue an order, let the Army issue it. I wouldn't even be involved. Let the Army issue an order that makes that a permanent base.
All right, I would like to tell him that I've talked to you and that I think that'll be done, if that's all right.
Oh, it sure is. I want to
get a little credit with him because I promised him if he'd help us that I'd help him, and I want to kind of, I guess he'll know it, but I'd like to call him you do it tomorrow.
Yes, now, you call him, but what you better do is not tell him flatly.
No.
You'd better do is tell him that I talked to you, and I put it up to you, and you have told me that if there is a sound basis on which it can be done, you want it done. You can tell him that, and then you'd say that I'm looking into it, and that he would then hear from me. But you have it on a basis that you instructed me.
That's good.
Okay? Let's see if I had one. Another quick item. Oh, yeah, one other quick one. Now, this may not be true. I don't know. It came from a source that I attach some credibility to. You may already have better information than I. But this source told me last night that the next Gallup poll was going to show a 2-point drop in Nixon's rate and a 9-point increase in Humphrey's rate. Could be true or couldn't be.
I don't know.
I
would think that Humphrey ought to go up because there's not any other way for him to go. I would think that the 8% that is undecided, and that's the one I took last week we got, it showed Nixon at 43, and it showed Humphrey at 28, and it showed Wallace at 21, and 8% undecided. I believe those 8% to be largely McCarthy people. I don't think any of them can, if they decide, go with Nixon or with Wallace. It shows me that he has a potential there of 35, 36. Now, it may be some people disillusioned with him that go for him, and that the heretofore disillusioned and go for him now. There may be some, too, I think, that get to wondering a little bit about Nixon. Just would you like to have Dick tapping your telephone? Stuff like that, folks might do it.
I think maybe the debate thing might affect people, too.
Well, could.
Could.
And then people, when a guy gets going too good, they don't like it.
Yeah.
People don't much like that. I would think that Humphrey has to come up. I don't think that Humphrey can handle himself as he did on that telephone this morning and be a very good president. And that just troubles me to death because I want him to be. I thought he'd be the best vice president we had. I thought that he'd be a good candidate. I just thought everything. But when it got through this morning, I said, gentlemen, I'll be glad to have any of your comments. Nixon just spoke up and said, Mr. President, I will follow that policy. I will do nothing whatever to affect the negotiations and undercut them. Wallace spoke up and said, I support the government's policies and Secretary of State and Defense and the Joint Chiefs, and you can count on me. And Humphrey said, thank you, Mr. President. And you could just hear them gasp almost, and I damn near did.
Well,